Hi, my name's Londe Yusuf.
And my name is Reggie Williams.
And we're the co-founders of Black Film Space. Black Film Space is a grassroots organization dedicated to enhancing the skill sets of Black filmmakers and building a community of creatives. We host events such as screenwriting workshops, panels, mixers, and other events that are designed to support Black content creators.
In the next episode of the Black Film Space podcast, we interview Warren Drummond, a storyboard artist. Warren has worked on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nightcrawler, and Fences. We talk with Warren about the storyboard process, industry standards, working with directors and cinematographers, and much more. And now, on to our interview. All right, Warren, thank you so much for joining us on the Black Film Space podcast. How are you today?
I'm good today. It's a good day. It's all good.
Awesome. Awesome.
How are you guys?
I'm doing good. Really excited to have you on the show. Again, this is not something that I personally know a lot about storyboarding. I have never storyboarded one of my projects before.
That's an outrage.
Well, I mean, I feel like it.
I'm bringing heat early. Just know that I'm bringing the heat early. Okay.
No, I appreciate it. Makes for an exciting interview. So it's very much appreciated. It's just that I've made one film. One narrative film, and I did not have the budget for a storyboard, so I just made like a shot list. So
okay,
why can you pitch to me and to the listeners why it is important to storyboard?
Storyboards are important because you can visually put everyone on the same page. I'll give you an example. I was working on, I was one of the four storyboard artists on Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. And we had all our, there was a big chase scene at the end, a race actually. And the artists, we all put our boards on a bunch of tables all laid out. And the stunt coordinator, who's a good friend of mine, a legend named Terry Leonard, he looked at all the storyboards and said, "I'm going to need twice a day." Because he saw with all the shots, he would need twice the amount of days they had planned for it. When you see it, and you could kind of time out how long each shot might take and the setups, how many setups you may have to do, will you have time in the day or the week to do the setups? And also, is a shot practical? And does one shot flow into the next? Is it too wide? Is it too tight? Is it from the wrong angle? Are you crossing over the line? That's another film term. Are you crossing the line?
The 180 line.
Is it movement?
Mean?
Is it yes? Yeah. Is it static? Well, not the religion, sex, or preference line, but yes, the 180 line. Yeah. So it's just a great way to have a bunch of people sit down, and everyone doesn't have to read minds because it's right there in front of you. That's why storyboards work.
Can you talk about your process? Okay, someone gives you a project. They say, "I want you to do the storyboarding for me." Like, how do you put that together and get going?
Well, it depends. Some directors like to be involved from the start. They'll have shot ideas already laid out. They'll have a shot list, and they'll feed you the shot list. They'll just have everything typed up, or they'll email it. So, you know, shot one, wide shot, is the establishing shot. Shot two, camera pushes in closer to whatever. Shot three, everyone's attacked by aliens, zombies, who are also Kung Fu Master ninjas. That's the one way where everything's laid out. The opposite would be directors. And for the first part, the late, great John Singleton was someone who liked to have everything written out. But he would also leave me freedom to come up with things. On the inverse, Ron Howard on A Beautiful Mind, or the two movies I've storyboarded for Denzel Washington, will have conversations, and they would let me come up with the overall shot selection, and then they would say yay or nay, or we'll carry through with it. Denzel found that part of when we were doing Fences, which he directed, he said that he likes my storyboards not just because of what it tells him what he wants, but it tells him what he doesn't want. because he has a certain style and he had a style for that film. So if you want to have something that does not have very obtuse or acute angles or low angles or too high angles, and that's not what you're after, then you'll tell your artist, I like to be more of a real life version of story telling. If you're doing an action movie, then you want to have something that's like a hyper reality that's going to be exciting. So that's the two polar opposite ways of seeing storyboards. And some directors are in the middle, where they'll have a certain idea of certain shots that they want for the scene, but not all of them. So they'll say, I do want to have a low angle shot of person A punching person B. I want to have a high establishing shot of the car going from point A to point B, skidding, doing a 180, people get out, fire guns, get back in, and then zooming off. But they don't know what's going on in the middle. So it's all about being a combination of all three.
How does a director work with you to determine how much creativity and flexibility that you have?
Right. Well, during the first meeting that we have, we'll go over, I'll ask, what is the visual aesthetic for the movie? When I worked on Antoine Fisher, and it was the first movie that Denzel Washington directed, he told me Ordinary People would be the tome, the visual style for the movie. Some directors like to control it as far as they lay shot list everything. And that would be in the category of the late, great John Singleton would shot list everything. But he would give you the freedom to, if you came up with something fun or cool or great, he'd put it in. Other directors like Ron Howard, when I worked with him on A Beautiful Mind, or Denzel on Antoine Fisher, or the movie Fences, which he directed, they don't generally shot list. What they do is you'll talk about the scene, and then you'll come up with your storyboards, your layout, your work very rough, so you don't waste time. And then they'll say yes to this direction, no, or I like this and this, but I don't like that. So it's just a different way of thinking. When I do the Halloween films, David Green, the director, he doesn't shot list at all. So he will just say, go do the scene. And since he trusts me, because we've done a bunch of movies together and commercials, he'll freely let me come up with anything I want to come up with. That's only because he trusts my shot selection and my storytelling. Because it's not just about coming up with this cool shot or that cool shot. It's really about tell the story. How well do you tell the story? I can work with Denzel because I can work in a very natural way of doing a movie as far as realistic films. I could do action movies or I could do comedies because I can also do the hyperbolic big sequence kind of movies. So you just have to adjust per the filmmaker. And mostly filmmakers want you to be creative. They don't want to have someone that just says, tell me everything. They want to be surprised, because as you excite the filmmaker with your ideas, they get excited. And when they get excited, everybody gets excited. And then you get their excitement permeates the whole crew. And then they come back to you. Then you get excited. It works in a perfect circle. So it's all about everyone bringing their A game.
That was great. Thank you.
Can you talk about like the industry standard software? You know, do you do this by hand or digital? Did you have to like kind of graduate into doing digital?
We went from paper markers to digital, and digital was back then Photoshop or Painter. Those were the two primary programs when you did digital. So people use either a Wacom pad, where you would draw on a pad and you look at the computer, which I find very hard, or you use another product that the Wacom produced. It's called a Cintiq, which is a screen which is angled like a drawing table, and you draw on the glass screen. And the screen wiring is connected to your computer, so it's like you're drawing on paper, but you're drawing on glass, and the information is stored into your computer. So back then, it was either you were either Painter or Photoshop. But then new programs popped up. There's a storyboard specific program called Toon Boom. Toon Boom is the name of the company, Storyboard Pro. And they've been doing it for over a decade. So they have a storyboard, they have a program that's specifically for storyboards. And then you have other programs like Procreate, which people use, Manga Studio, and there's other programs. So you're not really locked down to one thing. But you by and large, because you will be digital, because that's where the pipeline, meaning the pipeline where it starts with you, you're doing the work, and then you send it to the art director and everyone else, and then it may go to the previous people, and previous may do animatics, which are animated storyboards. And it's not just animating the storyboards. And then you have previs, and previs is like a computerized computer animation of your frames. So they don't use your actual frames, but they'll use your composition, and they'll base their animated version of the film on your storyboard composition.
Got you.
Yeah.
What do you think about some of these storyboard apps on the phone, like Storyboard Animator, Previs Pro, Celtics has a storyboard feature. Celtics, a screenwriting software, has a storyboard feature.
As long as it's not Celtics and basketball team.
I knew you were going to say that.
Come on,
that's
man.
Why I clarified myself. Because
I'm from New York. I'm from New York. Hey, all right. I don't really use those. I haven't done any work on my phone. I find people that can draw on their phone to be amazingly talented. It's enough for me just to draw on a computer, actually. So anything that expands my belief, and I think it goes for a lot of things, anything that will expand capabilities, fantastic. All for it.
Got you.
So, because this isn't 1985 anymore.
You're right. That is a valid point. So I think I've seen an app or some software where you just kind of, you're not really drawing it. You're just kind of plugging it in.
Uh-huh.
Is there a difference between that and the actual like drawing that takes a little bit more of a skill set?
I think you're referring to a program that may have where you can put figures in and you could put in, let's say cars.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Burn Notice was a show that I used to work on back in the day, and the creator, Matt Nix, would direct every so often, and Max and Matt used to use a storyboard program which is like that, where you would put the figures in and you could put them in cars or in various environments, and he can use that. And I do know the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. affects people. They had a whole program where they can digitally put in people and aircraft and effects, and they would then use those for their storyboards. So I've heard of them. I've seen them. They work well. Hopefully they don't put me out of business or my colleagues. But everyone that doesn't have time to hire a storyboard artist, sometimes they just use those programs to work the things out. So I don't have a problem with them, with the programs, as long as they don't become the norm and everyone has to use them.
And So as far as that becoming the norm, what is the value that like a actual professional storyboard artist brings to the film? Like you kind of touched on it in my first question, mm-hmm. but because the technology is just advancing and advancing, you know, why?
Because I can make directors think of things they never thought of. For example, without naming the film, there was a film I worked on. We had to keep the identity of a character secret for the entire movie. But at the end of the movie, one of the possible victims is yelling at this character who has a mask on, but is taking the mask off on camera. And she's yelling at the person saying, "How can you do this to us? You were a part of us and all this." And you could tell from how she's saying it, who she was talking to. And it would have given everything up like 10 minutes early. Or you can tell a director, you know, a better way to stage a scene would be to stage it this way. Or what if we start with a wide shot than a close-up, because a wide shot would give us geography, which would make the payoff better in the long run. Programs are just tools. They're great. You give someone a hammer, nails, a saw, they can do plenty of things. But if someone really knows how to use them and has great ideas as far as architecture, you can come up with a lot more ideas using the same type of tools, but your own tools that you carry in.
Yeah.
You follow?
No, that makes sense. And I do think there is always going to be a need for actual artists. That's why you're called a storyboard artist.
Right. We're not just there.
We're not robots.
Exactly. That's it, man. You know, we're there to be part of the filmmaker team, not just someone who just nods their head and says, "We'll draw whatever you tell us to."
Yeah.
The best of us will come up with ideas to make the film better, because if not, the director can hire anyone.
Yeah.
You know?
So that being said, what is your relationship like with the cinematographer or the screenwriter, if at all?
Okay. Screenwriters, whom I generally I'm crazy about, because I got into the business to actually try to be a screenwriter. I don't have much contact with them at all. I've only run into them maybe on Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was very well written, and I met on A Beautiful Mind, I met the screenwriter there, but by and large I don't relate to them at all. The cinematographers, aka the DPs, it's a yes and no. On certain movies, I have an old friend, a really great DP in New York named Stuart Dreiberg. So Stuart and I met on this movie, Analyze This, Robert De Niro, Billy Crystal movie. Mm-hmm. The director, the late Harold Ramis, did not shot list. Harold let Stuart come up with the framing and the shots, by and large, at least for the action. Perhaps for simple conversational scenes, Harold would do it. But as far as the action and scenes that had camera movement, Stuart would actually sketch things out. And then he'd give them to me, and then I would elaborate on his sketches. So that was our relationship. And Stuart and I have done several films together. But he thinks very visually. When I worked on A Beautiful Mind, Roger Deakins, who many consider to be the best, mm-hmm. he had no real say with the storyboard artists. There are two of us, two board artists, Brick Mason being the first one. And it was really just the artist and Ron Howard and the second unit director, who also is the EP, Todd Halliwell. it was really just the four of us. Roger came in afterwards. Sometimes the DP is part of the process. I've had plenty of meetings where the DP is a big part of it. I've had other films where it's just the director, and then the DP will come in later. I've had other movies where I may work with the stunt coordinator a lot, which is why I know a lot of stunt people, because I work with them all the time. So the DP is sometimes they're in, sometimes they're not. And sometimes it's just the DP. When we did Straight Out of Compton, we worked with F. Gary Gray to start with. And then when he became too busy, the DP took over as far as doing the shots. So it depends.
Is there a movie that you did not work on?
Casablanca.
Okay.
The early Chaplin movies, early Chaplin, Enter the Dragon, which really hurts me because that's Enter the Dragon's one of my favorite movies of all time. Thank you, Bruce Lee. Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. There's a lot of us, as far as, let's just say, people in the union in California. I think there's active board artists maybe between 100 to 150, and that's just California. And then you have board artists in New York, where I'm from, and then you have some people in Atlanta. But I have worked on a lot of movies. There have been films where people came up to me and said, "You worked on that?" I said, "Yeah, that was me." It happens. But I've got friends who worked on a lot of films also. So, I mean, wherever. I've been around. My second movie was Above the Rim. Mm. My first movie was the Drop Squad. It wasn't until the next year where I got to work on Die Hard with a Vengeance, which was my first big movie. I was the second unit storyboard artist, so I didn't work with the director, John McTiernan. I worked with the second unit director, who was also the stunt coordinator, but the legendary Terry Leonard. Terry, who 15 years earlier was Indiana Jones on the White Horse in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he gets dragged underneath the truck. That was Terry. So Terry became a stunt director and a second unit director. So on Die Hard, I worked with him on the scenes that he would film that didn't have the principal actors, but would have had the stunt people. And it's also that was also my first Sam Jackson movie. And we met, and we're still friends.
That's so dope that that you have this catalog of films that you've worked on. And
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But it's great, you know, it's great working with great people. I mean, and the fact that I can say I met and talked with Tupac, you know, I've met legendary people, but also part of working on the film is just meeting crew people. Some crew people are just fun, cool people that I'm still friends with. That goes from anybody. So when you're working on a movie, it's a circus that's in town for a little period of time. You have a great time, and then you wrap. Is done, and you may see them on another movie. I worked on the TV show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for 6 seasons out of 7. So I knew a lot of people there, and I knew a lot of the actors. So you become close to certain people. So that's something where you wait, will the show be picked up again? So working on films and working on TV shows is still about relationships. It's just very simple, you know. Don't be an a-hole, and after that everything else is pretty easy.
Yeah
Just be nice.
What was your favorite project to work on, though?
Ooh, favorite, I'll say if I had to pick one out of all of them, And this is, and it's hard. I'd say in the running, Too Fast, Too Furious, because I got to work with one of my best friends, John Singleton. Mm-hmm. I got to work with someone that's like my uncle in the business, the stunt coordinator, Terry Leonard. Terry, who hired me on Die Hard with a Vengeance, I got him his job on Too Fast, Too Furious. So that was a perfect circle there.
Awesome.
I was in South Beach, you know, Paul Walker, very humble cat, young Tyrese. So that was great. Another great movie, Fences. Fences was great because Denzel, people don't realize what an amazing filmmaker Denzel is. He's so sharp, and he's the most focused filmmaker I've ever worked with. He's just totally focused on the job.
Really?
Yes, just everything's about, like when we first met on Antoine Fisher, is his first movie. Mm-hmm. So he just tried to learn from everybody, and he would, the first meeting that we had, I came up with this idea, and he wrote it down on his notepad, and I was like to myself, said Denzel Washington's writing notes, something that I said, oh my god, you know, trying not to freak out, but on the outside, I was like, yeah, that's right, yeah, uh huh, okay, yeah. Well, anyway. But it's pretty amazing. But on Fences, he was just so laser focused because I think he wanted to do August Wilson justice.
Right.
And it was his second movie. He was working with Viola Davis. He was working with the cast, most of the cast of the Fences play that he was in. It was the second movie, so once you've done something, you want to do something better. And even in conversations, he just didn't want to chit-chat. He just wanted to talk about the movie by and large. Now, his focus was kind of like this. If we were in the street and someone would come up to him and ask for a photograph and we're doing a location scout, he just would not give them a picture. Because he had to focus on why he was there, what he was going to do there, what he was going to do for the movie. But once mm-hmm. the camera stopped, or once we finished, he would take pictures, he'd give hugs, he'd talk to kids. There was a kid on the block who lived on the block of where the main house is on Fences. First time that we ever saw the kid, he asked for a photograph. And then so he had to work. He was just focused on it. No. The next time when he was off hours, Denzel gave him boxing lessons. Seriously. He would take pictures with the kid. He's that nice.
That's awesome.
But he knows that if he's that way with everyone while he's working, he'll never get his work done. So it's never about him not being, he's a very humane person. What he knows is if I don't put 100% into it now, I won't get it done, and it's going to become short on the other end. So so his energy is there while filming, and then once you wrap or something, he's great with people.
Awesome.
But I love the guy. Yeah.
I can't wait to meet him one day in the future. So can you talk about how a director can make your job easier? What do you need from them when you start to storyboard?
Well,
when have you felt like a director was like really prepared?
Okay, well, Denzel's always prepared. Most people are prepared. I mean, what you want to have is what is the shooting style that they're looking for? Do you have location pictures? That's something that's really helps so much when you know exactly what the spaces you're filming in. Because if you say it's a house, your storyboards depends on the design of the house. So when I did the Halloween movie, the 2018 reboot of the movie, David Gordon Green, the director, before he had the house picked out, he couldn't really give me the shots that he needed. But once he had an actual location, he had me set up with photographs and he knew exactly what he wanted, and it was easy. So once you have the style that they need, the location, it's nice to know who the actors are, but it's not a mandatory thing. Like if a show is in cast, I'll ask, okay, who are they like? So then you could then you can at least make a body type of what the character might be like. Tall, short, thin, large, whatever, white, black, Asian. But you need to have, it's good to have those points. And sometimes people don't get cast till very late, so that happens also. But just what makes it easy in the short run is just having the director be prepared, and that they'll give you good feedback.
So what do you think made you good and helped you to continue to get hired, especially as you were learning?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. The learning period. I learned a lot, certainly in the first 5 years. You know, I remember working on Above the Rim, and the DP was figuring a shot out, and he was backing up, and he backed into me. And the first AD, Howard McMaster, he said he was kind of pissed. He said, the DP's pass is sacrosanct, that you can't get in the way of a DP on a set. So from then on, when they were working things out, I stood quite far away, or I would just make sure that I was not in the path when they're moving around the director and the DP. But also on that film, I learned things from the DP, Tom Priestley, about shooting dimensions, that there should always be a foreground, middle ground, and a background element to your storyboards. Meaning you should always have your characters in a space, and it shouldn't, there should always be, like, if you ever look at Steven Spielberg, he'll often have objects that are close to camera, objects in the middle, and something to look at for far away. And the object that, or the person that's closest, is not necessarily the person that's talking, but it gives a frame dimension. What I have learned is making your frames interesting. Composition is a huge part of what we do. How do you compose a frame? So you look at Spielberg, who looked at Sergio Leone and Hitchcock and all these other classic directors who knew how to compose a frame. You don't want to have everything centered. People, let's say like a Wes Anderson, he shoots in a very theatrical style. Everything is facing you, everything's really flat, but his style is made for that. So he could shoot something that looks flat and theatrical, but it works for his style of filmmaking. You couldn't do Wes Anderson and do an Indiana Jones movie. It wouldn't work. So you always have to think about the composition. And also, what I also learned is just think like a director. Think, how does this shot flow into the next? Because certain things may cut badly. You don't want to go from a shot that's panning left to right, and then suddenly go from a boom up shot or a close up on another object. You want to have something, everything should flow. Everything should flow and work together. A sequence should work together as a bunch of shots, which put together work seamlessly. Like putting a great dinner plan together. Everything's got to work together seamlessly.
Got you. And
yeah.
What I find to be fascinating, based upon your IMDb profile, the first movie you worked on was Above the Rim.
And second movie. The first one was Drop Squad. Yeah.
Okay. You got to hit up IMDb. Let them know. I guess, how did you get? Because these are big movies. I think these are big movies. How did you get from, how did you get up to that point? And you know, how did you learn film when you first started off?
All right. Well, I was in an organization which was actually at the time very similar to the group you're in. I was in a group called the Black Filmmaker Foundation. You heard of them?
No.
The Hudlin brothers.
Reginald Hudlin.
Reggie's still a very good friend of mine, and his older brother started a group called the Black Filmmaker Foundation, which would have basically young Black filmmakers who are not, let's say, getting work every day or everyday filmmakers to get together so people would meet and team up. And it's formed relationships that I have to this day, actually. And I was made aware of them. I used to work in the store Bloomingdale's, and a salesperson named Oscar Nunez, who years later would be Oscar on the show The Office, if you watched The Office. So Oscar told me about a group that he was in, the Black Filmmaker Foundation. I got into there. We met every third Saturday of the month. We had some celebrity guest speakers. And it was there that the assistant to the Hudlin brothers, a gentleman named Rodney Stringfellow, recommended me for a movie called The Drop Squad, which needed a storyboard artist. And I was hired. And that movie allowed me to quit my job at Bloomingdale's.
Nice.
Which I was allowed to then struggle for years. Anyway, I got above the rim. My cousin Maria from Orpheus Casting was one of the casting directors. So she recommended me. And then I got on with her and someone else, I believe. And then I got Die Hard because I believe someone from above the rim recommended me for that movie. And then I got hired on that movie by Terry Leonard. And then from that movie on, I was able to build up some names, but it was still very slow because in New York, movies were still generated in Los Angeles. So even though a film may be shot in New York, if it started in LA, they may already hire people from LA. Or hired the LA people would hire people they knew in New York. So it took a while to build up steam. It wasn't until I worked with John Singleton on Shaft where things really picked up. And Shaft was a two plus year process because I had to first work with John in Los Angeles. And this is where the early version of Shaft, John had written a version of the script where it was a father-son-daughter script. So he would use the original Shaft, and Shaft would have a daughter and a son. And he would have a son also named John Shaft who didn't necessarily want to follow in his father's footsteps. The original actor they hired, which was a well-known actor then and he's still known now, there was an issue, the artistic things, and that didn't happen. So then, since there were only X amount of bankable Black actors, it took 2 years until they cast Sam J. Jackson. And they couldn't cast Sam as being the son of Shaft, so he became a the nephew, and that's how that happened.
Got you.
But so the heat for Shaft though helped me with, since John would then tip me on from movie to movie, and I moved out from New York to LA, then my name started to get out there. Like John is the one who apparently John told Denzel about me, and Denzel hired me for Antoine Fisher.
Nice. So before Drop Squad, though, were you storyboarding for short films? Or
No. I was.
How did you start?
So I was working. I was working in Bloomingdale's on 59th and 3rd as a stock person. So the closest that I'd ever get to film were the actors and actresses who would come by this store. That's where it was. So I got to meet like Terrence Stamp, who was very nice, and Whoopi Goldberg was super nice to me. But I was not doing film work. I was actually doing illustrations for the hip hop magazine, the Source magazine. And I did illustrations for the Source for years. I also did work for some free work for this magazine, Starlog. Starlog was a very big science fiction magazine. And I did work for a couple pieces for the fashion magazine, Glamour magazine. But I wasn't working in film. So it wasn't until like my first film job, my friend Greg, I visited Greg Mays in LA, and Greg got me a job doing on a short film that I just did storyboards for this short film. Those samples that I did for the short film were the samples that got me hired on the Drop Squad.
Got you.
But before then, I had years of graduating from the School of Visual Arts where I was not in film, because my focus wasn't just on film. When I was in college, I had two aims, two goals. One, I still wanted to be a comic book artist, but I also loved to write scripts. And it was this split of focus, I think, which hurt me in the short term, but may have helped in the long run. Because I didn't focus on either screenwriting or comic book art, I couldn't become, let's say, great at either one. I was talented in both, but not great. So I wasn't good enough to be a comic book penciler or inker. And I had a job, so I couldn't just write and become a better writer. But I think later on, those tools of being able to tell stories and having drawing ability later helped feed into my being a storyboard artist.
Yeah.
It was not the goal that I had that I want to be a storyboard artist. I needed to have a sellable skill in the industry so they would take me serious as a screenwriter. So it was really a means to an end. Mm. But once I started to storyboard, I said, oh, I'm pretty good. I'm in the field that I'm going after. I'm not working in a job that I really don't want to be in. Because I had worked at Bloomingdale since college in my off hours. And then once you're there for years and years and years, it's like, okay, what are you doing? Where is your life going? So I had to make that change. And thankfully that change happened.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah,
that's dope.
But I also still have a lot of my friends from Bloomingdale's. So yeah, things end, but they don't end.
Yeah. Do you feel like storyboard artists nowadays, does it make more sense to go to school, or is it something that you can kind of, I don't know, go on YouTube and learn how to do?
You can. Okay. Well, there are classes for storyboards. I've taught a couple of them, but you can learn because it's good. It's great to have feedback to learn, right? And I have had some Padawans out there doing storyboards because you call me Obi-Warren is my nickname. So I've had some people that I have been a mentor in the business too. So I'd recommend if someone could take a class, take it by all means. If they can't, go online, YouTube, get this great book, Shot by Shot by Stephen Katz, K-A-T-Z. That's a great book on directing that has lots of storyboards. That's like the Bible for storyboard artists. But learn any way that you can. The online world has changed everything. So many things that you have to have, you have to be there in person, brick and mortar, you can do online. But to me, to learn anything, it's always great to have someone who's there physically. Like I train in martial arts and we can't train now in person because of COVID. So we train online. We have Zoom classes, but it's always better to have it in person, but you can learn things online via Zoom. That's my comparison.
I mean, you're clearly like established and good to go in the business, but what do you do to sharpen your skills or to just kind of stay competitive?
Well, in
the pool of existing storyboard artists.
There are certain artists, when I see them, I go, okay, I can't slack off. You know, it's just like anyone in your field that you respect and you see their work, they push you. And it's not like it's not the type of competitiveness where it's like, you don't like them. I like them. Like I have a very good friend named Peter Ramsey, whom you probably know who he is, but Peter was like the guy that I looked at for storyboards. He was John Singleton's original storyboard artist. So when John and I started to work together on Shaft, John showed me some of Peter's boards. He said, this is what I expect. And I was like, oh, because his work is like that good. But it his work pushed me to become better at it. And he's been pushed. And Peter later was one of the three directors who won an Oscar for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So it was that Peter Ramsey. And he's a brother too.
Wow.
No, I find if you can learn from people, learn. There's so many things I've learned from other artists, and it's not even about, you don't copy their style. Be like, what is it that this person brings that you love? Some people are really, really good at doing shapes and shadows and giving the atmosphere, right? There are other people who have their storyboards have so much action and energy. And then there are people who are great storytellers, which every frame flows from one to the other. So you absorb what you like and bring that into your own style, but you still keep your own style, but you acknowledge the influences that you have. I hopefully have influenced other people. I have younger artists that I help. And if it's not a style thing, I will give them advice on storytelling. I'll give them advice on the business of the industry. So I am spurred on by my peers. We're competitors, but we're not cut your throat competitors. Just that we're all in the same team. Just like Kobe wasn't inspired by Michael Jordan. He learned from him and they were very close. He wanted to beat him, but they loved each other. So it's kind of like that. It's not like being an actor where they will cut each other's throat in a minute because they want that job.
Because storyboard artists have different styles.
Yes.
How does a director know, particularly a newer director, let's say it's their first feature film or something like that, how do they know that this is the storyboard art? First off, who hires a storyboard artist? Is it the director? And how do they know that this is the right fit stylistically?
Right. we could be hired. Either you're someone the director works with all the time, because I worked with John Singleton for 20 years. Or you get hired by the producer who knows you, the line producer, the creative producer. You could be hired by a production office coordinator who's worked with you on other jobs. You could be hired by the DP. You could be hired by the production designer. It could be anyone, but it's often the producer or the director. But again, if you have relationships with people, they carry you from film to film.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really blind. Sometimes, and this happens all the time also, a movie doesn't have someone that definitely that is after, and the call goes out for the available people, and people send their samples, and whomever the director likes their style gets the job. And sometimes it's also, is there a personality fit? Because you can also just, some people you just get along with that person so well.
And as far as source material, like Marvel Comics, like does your approach change when you're storyboarding source material?
I guess when I've done a lot of comic book projects. So I guess merely because I want to make it exciting as a comic, but you have to be careful that what you can do in a comic does not always translate to what you can do in a film, because they're not the same. Film is constrained by the aspect ratio for your frame is steady the entire time. A comic book panel or frame changes size from panel to panel. So if you're working on a comic book project, I guess if you could give it the feel of a comic book, you've succeeded. But also remember, you're working in film. Mm-hmm. Now, my thing is, as a comic book collector and a geek, I get, you know, I'll be really technical, like, wait a minute, in the comics, this person's powers are ABC, but they're not here. Or you get really, you can do a deep dive. And sometimes it can be helpful, and sometimes they don't care because it's not the same thing.
And before, you mentioned that it took 2 years to storyboard Shaft because you're going through that the process of hiring an actor and all that. What is the typical... basically what I'm asking, what is the typical time to storyboard? How long does it take to storyboard a feature film?
Well, just to clarify, it wasn't 2 years of storyboarding on Shaft. It was the 2 years of stop and start of development.
Gotcha.
Because they had to find an actor, and then they had to change the scripts and do a whole new script. So it was the development factor. As far as how long it takes to do a movie, it depends on the project and how much will they storyboard. Because every film doesn't necessitate storyboarding the entire film, mm-hmm. or most of it. A movie can take, the longest I was on a movie was John Singleton was hired to do the original director hired for the A-Team film, which came out in 2010, I think. Mm-hmm. But John and I and two other artists were boarded that movie for 5 months. So I was the first guy hired, and we boarded it for 5 months. I have friends who do the Marvel movies, and you could be on for a year for Marvel movies. And it's that's with having a bunch of artists on the movie. I've done Analyze This, took like 3 weeks, but you could do a comedy and stay on it for 6 to 8 weeks. There's no set time.
Yeah.
It just depends on how much is the director just going to do one pass and goodbye, or are they going to keep reworking it and you never leave? I'll give you a great a great example. When I did Fences, which is one of my favorite jobs that I ever had, they originally said I would work in a movie for like 2 weeks in Pittsburgh and maybe fly back to LA and do another week. And that was it. But once I started working on the movie and I was in Pittsburgh and I went away and then I came back, and every week Denzel would say, Warren, stay another week. I said, okay. Next week, the travel person would make my flight out, call my wife, hey, I'm coming home. Denzel, hey, Warren, stay another week. Okay. I said, sure, some more money. And it went on. And every week, it became this big joke around the office that my travel would be set up. Kim, she was in the office, she'd set up my travel, and she'd give me that look, and I'd say, yeah, I'm staying. Mm-hmm. So I ended up staying right up until they wrapped. I missed maybe a few days before they wrapped. Mm-hmm. So, but that was because Denzel found my storyboard to be that useful for the movie.
Yeah.
He could have, in a bigger picture, perhaps figured it out with the DP, but it helped his process to work things out on paper first, or at least in seeing the frames first, mm-hmm. and then working the scenes out. Mm-hmm. So your length of time is whatever the time the director needs you to be on the movie.
Yeah. That was a great Denzel impression. You could be in SNL if this ever get tired of storyboarding.
I think Jay Farrow's got a better one, but that's what he does all the time. But I have worked with the man enough times to see his little tics. Mm. And what's funny is that on Fences, it would just be us in a meeting, and he would read from the script. And I'd have to stop from like freaking out, like he get into character, and I was like, okay, you see how I do it? You see? Okay, now all right, okay. Yeah. Now make a long story short, then make a long story long. That's what he always say.
Yeah.
And he would do it, and he's Denzel doing Denzel. But it was just amazing experience.
Yeah.
Yes, but it was just a great experience being around and just seeing his mind work. Mm. Because he's an actor who's a director. And when he's directing, you know, you see him as a director, not as an actor trying to be a director. No, he's a director.
Yeah.
But also, he's a theater person. He's steeped in theater. So with some directors, or actually most directors, I could say, well, it's kind of like that shot in blank, 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 and they'll know, boom. I would say that to Denzel, and he would just, I don't know that movie. Meaning he would know that movie in that way, mm-hmm. because he would tell me, he told me once, he said, I'm a theater actor who does film. And the theater is, of course, what made him a great actor,
yeah.
besides his own talent. But how you work, you have to work differently with different directors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's one of those guys I would work for any day,
I
anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as far as how many storyboard artists are on a film?
Is depends.
It just you or... Yeah, it depends.
I've been on most of my movies have been just me. If I let's say I cataloged them all, most are just me, but Rise of the Planet of the Apes, where I was added on, there were like five of us on that one. There are four of us on Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, five of us on Fast and Furious on Too Fast, Too Furious, even though I was the main guy. There were five of us there. Two of us went to Miami. Like a big movie is going to have multiple people because it's just too much work for one person to do one big, like those big blockbuster type movies.
Yeah.
Halloween, I did by myself. And the one that's coming out next year is also by myself because it's not that kind of a movie. Yeah. So generally speaking, if it's a big action, Fast and Furious type of Marvel movie or that type of James Bond, you're going to have at least four people on it, probably.
And how?
But if you have a comedy, drama, it could be one person, two of the tops.
And how are y'all, what's the collaboration process like? Are you in the same room together? Are you constantly communicating, or is it just kind of you go in your corner and meet up every once in a while?
Well, I always go by the rule the tallest person gets to rule. So I'm 6'2". So no, it depends. We'll often work in a room together. Let's say two of us in a room because you don't want to have like three or four people. But usually, it's two in a room if they can. If they have a lot of space, you can get your own office. But that depends. Other times you're all working separately. Sometimes you're working out of the house and you all happen to be working on the same movie, but you're working out of your house. I did a movie called a Free Guy, and on Free Guy, I never worked in the office, but when we met, we'd come in and meet every week. And we go over what we're working on. So everyone would sit at the table and we'd pitch what the ideas were for that scene. And we'd all give feedback. So it depends. Mm-hmm. But by and large, we help each other.
Yeah. I mean, it's film, so you gotta.
Yeah, you just, right. you get, again. So the best times that I've had in movies are work with my friends. Mm-hmm. A wrinkle in time, we were working on a bunch of people. And it's just fun to come in and see your friends and you look at each other's storyboards during the day, you know? So yeah. It works both ways. Sometimes you're by yourself. Other times you're with a few people.
Do you have anything else that you want to tell the good people that are listening to this?
Well, I'd say if you can, for like when I was in the Black Filmmaker Foundation, networking is a big thing. But we find that I think particularly young Black filmmakers need to team up with each other. Mm-hmm. And not just, you know, not I'm going to go for mine, but team up and say, we're going to make something together great.
Yeah.
Because there are filmmakers, let's say, you have Caucasian filmmakers who have worked together for years, and they'll work together on a bunch of projects, and then people will grow, and they'll bring in young people, and those young people will grow and learn about the business, and they'll become their own producers and sprout off. And I think Black people need to, and this goes for all people of color, whether you're Asian American filmmakers or Asian or Latino, whatever. Work within your community to help each other rise up, rather than competing.
Yeah,
I think we really have to help each other. Like, I like to talk to young filmmakers or artists in general. I guess that's the parent in me. But I also like being there if there's a person of color or a female filmmaker, because you don't always have the advantages that other filmmakers have. Mm-hmm. So if people who are in certain positions don't reach out and help each other, what's the point?
Yeah.
When I started out, there was a brother named Daryl Henley who he'd only been in the business a few years longer than I had, but it could have been, he could have been in 10 years longer than I had, because he knew that much more about filmmaking and the business. But Daryl was always made himself available for me to ask questions, always from the start. Mm-hmm. So I tried to do the same thing to other people coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, the great, yeah, you got you have to always give back. Now, people who need help have to be worthy of help, yeah. Meaning people that say, I want this, but they won't work as hard, you know, or they give a, they don't give full effort, or they give effort, but they mismanage things or whatever. You got to make sure that if someone's going to help you, you're going to give 100% and you're going to be on point. The old term on be on point will be on point with everything.
Yeah.
And then when they become your age or older, then they can pass it back. That's the only way we're going to succeed, is we get better, but we make each other better and help each other, yeah. And pass it back.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Warren, for joining us on the Black Film Space podcast. This is an amazing interview. Appreciate your wisdom and your knowledge and your personality. This was really fun. I learned a lot about storyboard artistry, and hopefully I will be able to bring on a storyboard artist from my next project. That would be really useful. So is there a place that people can follow you on social media or anything like that? Or do you have like a website?
I'm on Instagram, and I will try to put on more storyboards. So much of my time is spent, if I'm not working, I actually just completed a script.
Oh, nice.
So I haven't been uploading a lot of storyboards, but you can actually Google my name and some articles and interviews will pop up on my storyboards. But I am on Instagram and I am on Twitter. Okay. And I'm on Facebook also.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Warren.
Thank you very much.
Right, have a good one.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Black Film Space podcast. This episode was co-executive produced by Gabrielle Charles and Sino Gibson and was edited by Marcus Rosendahl. If you're interested in being part of our community and attending events, please visit us at blackfilmspace.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Black Film Space. Subscribe to our email list and podcast. All right, see you soon.